Now the first link, the first nidana, the first stage, if you like, of the process of higher evolution is simply suffering. This might come as a shock to some of you, that the spiritual life begins with suffering. That the higher evolution begins with suffering. It's as though suffering gives us a shock. Through suffering, we become aware. We may be going on very nicely, very smoothly, in a sense, very happily, pleasantly, but only too often not with awareness, not with any spiritual sensibility or sensitivity. But then a jolt comes, a shock comes, we suffer. And this jolt, this shock of suffering, as it were, wakes us up. We realize sometimes that we've been living in a dream, in the midst of an illusion, that we weren't seeing things as they were. But suffering wakes us up. We begin to see them as they are. We begin to be more aware. And without awareness, we know there's no spiritual life. In fact, there's no truly human life, even. Without awareness, man is just a mass of blind animal reactions. And such a person, without awareness, a mass of blind animal reactions, we can describe perhaps as humanoid rather than human. Now, suffering is not just painful experiences. Suffering is not just the toothache or the cut finger. Suffering, we may say, is also the unsatisfactoriness, the inadequacy of ordinary life. Even pleasant experiences become ultimately unsatisfactory, unsatisfying. We may have everything that apparently is necessary to make us happy, to make us contented with a lot, but the fact remains we are not happy, we're not satisfied, we're not contented. We may have good health, we may have a pleasant job, may have a satisfactory home life, interesting hobbies, pleasant friends, and so on, but we're still not satisfied, still not contented. It's as though right in the middle of our heart there was some space unfilled, empty. And this, we may say, was certainly the Buddha's own experience in the early stages of his life, and that's why he left home. If anybody had any everything, it was the Buddha. Even if we leave aside legendary trappings and additions, it's pretty clear that the Buddha was born into a wealthy, highly respected family, that everything was, as it were, laid on for him from his earliest days. They had beautiful mansions in which to live. They had a wife, had a child, had social position, even political power, had the possibility one day of ascending the throne, succeeding his father. But at the same time, we know that the Buddha was not happy. And it's because he was not happy that he left all that, left his home, left his wife, left his parents, left his child, and went out into the world to solve that question of human happiness, of human suffering. And this, too, we may say, is the experience of quite a number of people. If they're honest with themselves, they have to admit that they're not really happy. They're not really satisfied, not really contented. Oh yes, job may be going all right, promotion may be going all right, salary may be increased, everything all right at home, children all right, no sickness, hobbies all right, friends all right, holidays all right, mortgage payments all right, nothing going wrong, but at the same time, not really happy, not really contented. But the majority of people, though they experience this, though they have this sort of feeling of something missing, of something lacking, of something wanting, even gnawing at them, gnawing at their heart sometimes, most people just smother it, just cover it over. They try to convince themselves that they are happy. They must be happy because they've got all the things that make people happy. What is it that they want? They try to say that it's just foolishness. I'm just being silly. It's just my delusion. Of course I'm happy. But then a little voice, a little whisper comes from deep within their heart and says, but you're not really happy. Right? And they say, yes, I am happy, so there. Right? And the little voice says again, no, you're not really happy, are you? Right? And you don't like to listen to this little voice. You put your fingers in your ears and you say, of course I'm happy, that's that. And off you go and do whatever you want to do. So most people smother it and stifle it in this way. But it's there underneath, sometimes building up, sometimes painfully pressing, sometimes festering, as it were, like a secret sore, like an abscess, almost like a cancer, but a positive cancer. So we shouldn't stifle it, shouldn't smother it. Rather, we may say, we should cherish our dissatisfaction. It's this that makes us restless. And it's when we become restless that we go in search of something, something higher, some better satisfaction, some better contentment, some greater happiness. Of course, we don't know at first what we're looking for. That's the ridiculousness of it. That's the beauty of it also. That's the meaning of it too. We don't know what we're looking for. Man is really on the path, or beginning to be on the path, we may say, when he's looking for something, he doesn't know what. But if we go on looking long enough, if we search hard enough, eventually, as though by some irresistible spiritual law, we come into contact with something higher. Or we come into contact with a symbol, an echo, a reflection of something higher. Come into contact with a book that speaks to us, a picture, a person. And then a response goes forth from us. And it's as though we said to ourselves in the depths of our being, in the depths of our heart, after our long search, after our long striving, that this is it. This is what unknowing I wanted. This is what unknowing I was looking for all the time. I remember in this connection a story that was told to me of her own life by a woman who became eventually a Buddhist nun. She was a French woman. And she led a rather active, rather vigorous intellectual academic life at the Sorbonne in Paris. She was a student for a while, then she was teaching. She was mixed up with all sorts of student activities. She was violently anti-communist. This was about 20 years ago. And she used to go around with a pair of skates, ice skates, with which to defend herself if she was attacked. She was a rather militant sort of woman, not to say aggressive. And she said, well, I thought if I carried around this pair of ice skates, if anyone was to try to do anything with me, she'd, I'd soon slash them across his face. This is the sort of woman she was. So she said one day she went to a museum of Oriental art, and she left her skates outside. She wouldn't need them there. She was safe in the museum. And she was going along the galleries, so rather striding, I imagine, along the galleries. She was a rather masculine sort of woman, striding along, looking to left and to right, rather fiercely as she usually looked. And suddenly she saw an image of the Buddha. And it was a Khmer image. And you probably know these Khmer images are particularly beautiful. They've got very peaceful, very silent faces with very mysterious smiles. Rather full lips, not altogether beautiful by our standards perhaps, but rather full lips, rather broad lips, curved at the corners in a very mysterious and a very beautiful, very haunting smile. And the whole expression of the face intensely peaceful. So this image and the face of this image just arrested her, as it were. She just stopped. She just stopped dead in her tracks, she said. And she just stood there looking at it. And she told me that she stood looking at this image without moving, almost without blinking, for 45 minutes. And she said she could not take her eyes off it. Because she said the impression of peace, the impression of tranquility, of wisdom, of knowledge, which emanated, which streamed, as it were, from those features, were so strong that she couldn't tear, she couldn't pull herself away. And she said that experience, that glimpse, changed her whole life. She felt that she'd found what unconsciously she'd been looking for all the time. And she became, in the end, a Buddhist nun. That's not the end of the story, but that's another story. So this illustrates what I've been talking about. We look, we search for we know not what, but something higher, something more deeply satisfying, more deeply contenting, and eventually we do find it. We do come into contact with it. And then we're thrilled, as it were, moved, as it were, to the very depths of our being, shaken, as it were.